To the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests. And that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And if you are just now tuning in, here it is in the latter half of 2012. A lot of change is happening. A lot of weird stuff is breaking out all across the world. And we have just been so overwhelmed with content, with news stories that we're taking tonight to try to get caught up. We have to do that once in a while. And, I mean, to be perfectly honest, we could probably just do nothing but that every week if we wanted to, because the mountains of material just keep piling in. I can't imagine where all this is leading. But, you know, I did a program about 2012, and if you're one of the people out there who is seeing the impact of 2012 in your own life, because it's a little different for all of us, you might find something to help you understand what's going on if you watch this program that I did in Charleston, South Carolina earlier this year called 2012 Raw Truth and the Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. And you can watch it tonight. You can watch it anytime you want to. Go to joshuapwarren.com. There's no period after the P. It only costs, like, I think, $4.95 or something to watch this. And it's about 2 hours, and you might find it insightful. And you'll also find some very interesting other stuff there at joshuapwarren.com as well. In the studio with Forrest Connor, we have investigator Shelley Wright. And, you know, we were talking, Shelley Wright, about the Edinburgh alien, we'll say extraterrestrial course. Some yes. people get very touchy when it comes to terms like that.
Right.
And given that this will be a very academic course, I presume, I imagine they're probably going to focus more on maybe microbial life and things that are more likely in the mind of the conservative education system, that it's a lot more likely they're going to find some type of bacteria than an alien with two arms and two legs running around. I personally have no problem believing that the latter form of alien exists, that, you know, we have been visited. I think the circumstantial evidence is strong enough for that. But then you come across stories like this one, and it makes you think even more about the possibility of what visitation means, what it has meant. This is a story out of Roswell, New Mexico. Now, obviously, a lot of people associated with what happened there in 1947 have come forth over the years. We've had deathbed confessions and that sort of thing about people saying, look, there were bodies there. They weren't dummies. You know, they contacted the mortician in the middle of the night and ordered up coffins and all this kind of thing. And he supposedly saw these bodies. So now we have this story. A 35-year veteran of the CIA is now going on the record, and he says, look, it, quote, it was not a damn weather balloon. It was what it was billed when people first reported it, end quote. Now you might say, well, how does this guy know? Sure, the CIA knows all kinds of stuff, but how does this guy know? Well, here is the story. He says that he apparently went to a storage facility with a lot of records. He said, quote, it was a vaulted area and not everybody could get in. One day, I was looking around in there and reading some of the titles that were mostly hand-scribbled summations of what was in the boxes. And there was one box that really caught my eye. It had one word on it, Roswell. I took the box down, lifted the lid up, rummaged around inside it, put the box back on the shelf, and said, "My God, it really happened." Some written material and some photographs. And that's all I'll ever say to anybody about the contents of that box, he said. But he continued, quote, "But it absolutely, for me, was the single validating moment that everything I had believed and knew that so many other people believed had happened. Truly, that was what occurred," end quote. And, of course, you know, it's amazing when you read stuff like this. But then I just received this email. I haven't even had a chance to read it in detail. And it relates to the story I just read you. The guy, the CIA agent, he's coming forth more and more, and he actually is giving a little more details. The contents revealed photographs and references to the cadavers, you know, actual organic dead humanoid creatures. And, you know, the guy is, you know, he's worried about revealing what obviously is top secret material. You have to be. I've often thought that maybe a big component of 2012 would be some revelations along these lines. But the email that I got is from a guy who is so interested in using this as an opportunity to corroborate what the CIA agent has said, that he is offering a whistleblower award of $1,000. Now, that may not seem like a heck of a lot of money, but this is what this dude's pulling out of his own wallet. $1,000 being offered as a public service in supporting, as he writes, our fellow citizens' stakeholdership in learning the entire contents of that CIA files box. He says, be assured that your submitted evidence would be shared with one or more pertinent congressional committees empowered to subpoena relevant testimony from such witnesses as the CIA agent and other personnel. We do now have the name of the CIA agent, but I am not going to announce that on the radio. I think you can probably find that easily enough yourself. But the guy who's offering the award, he lives in Virginia. And if you have some information that you think is pertinent, and now is the time to come out and reveal this, just email me, and I'll act as a bit of a filter for this, and see if I can put you in touch with this guy who is, you know, serious about it. You can email me. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll find an email address there for me if you just keep scrolling down. And, yeah, we'll put you in touch with the right people. But, you know, I from time to time, I bring up on the show here that I worked on a television program that was shot in Roswell, New Mexico. And I'm not even supposed to talk about a lot of the things that happened during that program. What I can tell you is the program we thought was going to be a huge smash hit because we were there in Roswell, and all this bizarre stuff was happening. We were being followed around by suspicious people. Our whole crew was pulled over and detained by the Roswell police without explanation when we were on our way to the supposed crash site. The whole time we were out there, we were being monitored by a couple individuals in a white Suburban, similar to what you may have seen happen at Area 51. There were times when I had conversations with people that I thought were private, and then somebody else would make a comment that left no doubt in my mind that my conversations were not private, that they were being monitored as well. And one thing that sort of made it all come to a head was when we went to Hangar 84, which is supposedly where the bodies were brought after they were first retrieved. And the TV program wanted to do something novel that would be kind of sensational. They wanted to hold a seance in Hangar 84. And the reason is we had talked to doctors and nurses there in Roswell who went on camera and swore that they were being haunted by the ghosts of the aliens. Talk about a crazy story, you know, combining ghosts and aliens together. But, I mean, these were professionals, yeah, who came right out and said, we're seeing the spirits of these things. So we did this seance, And, you know, forgive me if you've heard this story before, but at one point, one of the cameramen collapsed. And he was, you know, a young, healthy guy. We halted production. And we were shooting this in a big old dark empty hangar, and we were using night vision for a lot of the footage, which is now very common. And the guy, we almost called 911, but he caught his breath, and you know he basically said, "I don't know what happened. Maybe I locked my knees, whatever." So the director decided to pick up where we left off, and we rolled back the video footage to the point just before the guy collapsed, to see what was happening for consistency, of course. And you see all of us sitting there at the table, and then this thing that I can only describe as appearing very much like a phantasmal serpent appears over our head, sort of slithering through the air, right over in the direction of the guy who collapses at that point. It's so weird. I'm not sure what it was, and I don't have permission, of course, to ever release that. I do have a copy of it, and Forrest, you've seen it. Have you seen it, Shelley?
No.
You've never seen that?
No, you haven't shown me.
Yeah. Well, maybe the CIA is going to come and, you know, take me out now, but I'll see if I can show you some of this sometime. But it was shot for a major network, and the whole thing was canned. I mean, we were like, wow, we hit the jackpot. We've captured this incredible bit of footage. And we thought this, you know, we'd hit a home run with this show, obviously. And it was the strangest thing, that as soon as the network found out what we had gotten, one day, all the higher-ups who were associated with the project were terminated. They would not return even personal phone calls from those of us working on the show to see what had happened. To this day, those people will not speak to us. And something was clamped down quickly, and that footage may never see the light of day. If there was nothing to this, why would all that stuff happen? And I could go on and on and on telling you more and more about this. But that, combined with a lot of other stuff I've seen over the years, has convinced me, yeah, there's something going on here. And the best explanation is it was contact with extraterrestrials. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue digging through all this material. I have a story for you about Mars, and also a very interesting story about new cars that are being produced and the options that you have soon. I'm John P. Warren. It's a program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange, and we'll continue right after this. You're having a great summer night wherever you may be, enjoying this program, Speaking of Strange. Hope you're boogieing down out there, nice cold beverage, enjoying yourself. We thank you for spending your evening with us as we all go together through this maddening year 2012, full of a lot of chaos and weirdness that's just climaxing, compounding. And of course, as usual, if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you can find links to more of this stuff, podcasts of some of the older shows that you can download for free as MP3s. There's a live chat during the show. Our Facebook page link, our Twitter link, all that kind of stuff there. So be sure to stay informed. And also be sure to sign up for the free e-newsletter at the site for the latest updates. I write them. They come directly from me. And hopefully you'll find the content interesting. You know, we were talking about alien stuff. And another thing, just as a companion, apparently, you know, for a while now, the UK appears to be trying to lead the way a little bit in releasing a lot of these documents about UFOs. And there's been a new development in that. Around 7,000 documents have apparently been released, spanning four decades from the UK, and they are from the Ministry of Defense in Wales. They include the case of a sighting near a bay there, at a peninsula, the Gower Peninsula, in September 2005, describing the UFO as looking like a World War II Luftwaffe prototype jet. They have a report from 1996 of a bright object with flames coming out the rear, only about 20 feet above the ground, moving very fast. Why are they releasing all this stuff? You know, there is this sense that maybe most of the governments of the world, they know that we're being visited, but they didn't get the crash like we got here. And it could be that most of these governments aren't covering up as much as our government is, because, you know, they want to know as much as we do about what happened in Roswell. And but also, you know, we're still just coming out of that sort of Cold War climate. I mean, it was right after World War II when all of a sudden a bunch of UFOs appeared flying around Washington, D.C., and thousands of people saw them, and nobody could do anything about it. You know, the military doesn't want to give an impression of powerlessness. So maybe it has to do with that. And wouldn't it be weird if it turns out that aliens actually are from just, like, right here in our own galaxy? That would be the most mind-boggling thing, because we think, oh, well, if aliens are out there, they're from so far away and they're so advanced that we can't even relate to what they're doing. But, you know, on the other hand, we are learning more and more about Mars. It says right here, latest weather report in Mars, it's snowing! MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology researchers have found snowflakes on the Martian surface. It's safe to say that, of course, a lot of people can still remain very doubtful about the topic of alien life. But anytime you find things like snowflakes or a low-lying fog, that kind of moisture, it adds to the possibility of organic life as we know it forming. But when it comes to things a little closer to home, you know, we've always, everybody gripes about, hey, it's 2012, where are the flying cars? And honestly, we're not going to be seeing flying cars anytime soon. Yeah, flying cars are out there, but that doesn't mean that you and I are going to have one. I mean, I don't even have a helicopter, and those have been around for quite a while. This stuff is really, really, really expensive. And if you don't know how to fly it, you have to hire a guy to fly it, and that's not cheap. And it's very complicated to fly things around. But this is a little bit closer to what the average American might be able to appreciate. Apparently, new Fiats, according to CNN, are being made with espresso machines inside. Now, I enjoy a good espresso from time to time, but I'm not one of these guys who's addicted to caffeine. You know, I'm addicted to other things. But no, I don't get up every day and drink coffee or whatever. Shelley, you probably do, don't you?
Yes, I go to a little coffee truck in the mornings before work, and I get my little coffee fix, and I'm good for the day.
And what about you, Forrest? Are you a caffeine junkie?
I can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
I mean, usually I like to get like cold caffeine, like a soda or something in the morning.
Well, as you guys have seen, often I will drink a Red Bull or something before I do the show, just for a little energy boost. I had one tonight before the show. And some people are really down on that. I mean, I got lectured at a bar recently because I asked for a Red Bull, and they were like, oh, do you know how bad that is for you? I'm like, oh, well, never mind then. I'll just take a straight gin then. Because I come here for my health, of course. I mean, it's... I don't think Red Bull's any worse than anything else in a bar.
No. I mean, no.
Yeah. No? Yeah. No. Yeah.
No.
No, it's not. In my opinion, you know, I'm not inspiring all the kids to go out and get messed up on energy drinks. I did see that is happening a lot, apparently.
Getting back to the Fiat story with the espresso.
You're inspired by this, are you?
Well, no. Just imagine the road rage cases that are going to pop up with this thing.
Good point.
Made me spill my espresso.
Well, no. Yeah, they're all hyped up on espresso, like that shot of caffeine, and just ready to chomp at the bit at anything. Someone cuts them off in traffic. Well.
Yeah. Well, that's a legitimate concern. Not to mention maybe spilling a bunch of it somehow in your lap, a bunch of hot espresso fresh out of the bank. But yeah, it says that this new crossover model, the Fiat 500L, boasts a whole range of accessories, but the one drawing the most attention and perhaps concern, the built-in espresso machine. And, I mean, but this story from, again, CNN's news blog, it doesn't go into great detail. But, you know, it'll probably be a hit. It will probably be a hit. And so next, I think you're going to have European models with the built-in bong and beer refrigerator. That's something like Rob from Holland might purchase in the Netherlands there. Why not?
Why not?
Why not just power the car off of marijuana? Seems like a logical leap to make off the espresso story somehow. And a twisted mind. But if that were not enough car weirdness for you, you know how that, you know, Google is always experimenting with things. I believe that probably there are a lot of guys right at the top of the Google pyramid. And speaking of bongs, they get high and they sit down and they decide to do crazy experiments. I can't blame them a bit. And because, you know, we were talking recently about how they created this artificial brain, and they hooked it to the internet, and it just starts watching cat videos, right? Well, now, maybe you've heard about this. Google has created what appears to be a legitimate driverless car. So they, and I have not seen a picture of this thing yet. But it requires no passenger. It's got GPS and all this stuff. So they decided to demonstrate this thing in Washington, D.C. So, which this, somehow, it just sounds like a bad idea on a number of levels to me. To just crank up a car and say, there it goes.
See ya.
Isn't that maybe a little irresponsible to those of us who aren't in a Google-mobile out there? And believe it or not, maybe it's not that surprising, this car got pulled over by the cops. And what a day those guys had, right?
The cop pulling this car over?
Yeah. He goes back and been on the force 20 years. Never seen this before. Kit is here. Knight Rider has come to fruition. It's 2012. What's the best we do? Cars with coffee that drive themselves. This is getting worse and worse the more I think about it.
What was he pulled over for? Or what was the car pulled over for?
Well, it doesn't say precisely why it was pulled over. So we'll have to do a little more digging on that one and figure it out for ourselves. But hey, we're up on a break. It was pulled over because it wasn't driving very well. When we come back, we'll talk actually a little bit more about beer, something else that I think is interesting I'd like to bring up, and also about a 23-year-old guy in Nebraska who has given himself a new creative legal name. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange, and boy, we're digging into plenty of it tonight. We'll be right back. Asheville, North Carolina are jam-packed tonight. It is Belle Share weekend, the biggest outdoor bash in the entire Southeast. I mean, you're talking about a city that usually has around 70, 80,000 people in it, suddenly exploding as many as 500,000 people can come cramming into here for 3 days. And, you know, every type of entertainment you can imagine is there. There are always a lot of mixed feelings. A lot of the locals don't like everything becoming so jammed up and streets being closed down and all. But I don't know. I mean, it's just there are pros and cons anytime you're throwing a big party. But, hey, if you've never heard this show before and you've just turned on the radio because you're here in Asheville tonight, hopefully you will enjoy this show enough to continue listening. It comes on every Saturday. We are syndicated. You can hear us on Alien Radio as well on the West Coast. Speaking of Strange is the name of this show. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. And if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll learn a lot more. Go to joshuapwarren.com, no period after the P, joshuapwarren.com, if you want to see some pretty cool pictures of spooky things. And, of course, one thing about Belle Share Weekend is that there is a lot of beer on the streets, because Asheville is known as Beer City. It has been voted Beer City for years now, and in some cases it ties with another city, but we consistently either have tied or been in first place there. And it's incredible how many of these really big breweries are coming to Asheville and opening up now. I mean, it's just exploding. And so I thought about Asheville and its reputation as Beer City when I saw this news story. And by the way, I have always heard that there are more people of Scotch-Irish descent here in our state than there are in Scotland and Ireland. I don't know if that's true. I wouldn't doubt it. The landscape apparently looks pretty similar here, and you know, a lot of the people who settled here wanted to settle in familiar territory. We know the Scotch-Irish like to drink beer, so it's not that surprising that these mountains would become beer central. But yeah, there's a story here, NPR story actually, saying, hey, it's no secret anymore. The key to good beer, simply enough, is the water. And that we supposedly, according to, I mean, all of these really big, highfalutin beer connoisseurs, we have the best water in the world. What do you think about that?
The same thing about pizza. It's the water that they use that determines how good the pizza is, too.
And, you know, I can understand why, obviously, you know, if your water has some funky taste, it's going to permeate everything.
Yes.
But I wonder if by good water they just mean it doesn't have a taste. Is that what makes good water? I don't know. I've never talked to a master brewer about it. Because, I mean, would you say that our water, when you're drinking well water now, not something that has had chemicals put into it, would you say that it tastes different around here, Shelley?
Okay, I have well water, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. I do not drink my well water.
Mm-hmm.
Asheville water is usually pretty good,
mm-hmm.
really, unless they put a lot of chemicals in it, and then you can really taste it. It's awful.
It varies a lot, you know, from place to place. I have a well, and I would say that I have good water in the sense that it doesn't have any chemically taste, but once in a while it gets sediment in it, you know. So I usually filter it just to get sediment out of it. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. We'll see how that continues to affect the beer scene around here. I've never been to Nebraska. Have you guys?
Nope.
Nope.
A guy in York, Nebraska, he's 23 years old. He went to the courthouse there and changed his name legally. He walked out, and his name was Tyrannosaurus Rex. That's a Fox News confirmation. He said he wanted to change his name because, quote, it sounds cooler.
Good for him. I mean, I'd hate to try and, you know, sign that big long name on something, but
it's weird how you can do
T-Rex down.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's what he'll do. T-Rex. He'll be signing autographs the rest of his life. It's like instant celebrity. Anybody can go get a wacky name. I don't know how much it costs. Probably not that much. But I'd love to have been there just to watch the reaction from the people at the courthouse.
Well, does he have rights to that name now?
If so, he's going to be quite, well, he says he's an entrepreneur. I don't know what he does, but he apparently is going to benefit from that. T-Rex? I've never seriously considered changing my name. I know that there are people out there who probably should change their name. I hate to bring this topic up because in order to do so, you have to give real people's real names. But I'll give you one example. I know somebody in another state who, and the family's last name was Hogg, and so they named their daughter Ima.
Oh.
Yeah. That's pretty bad.
That's so
sad.
Was
she a big girl?
I don't know. I never met her in person, but. And you know, and I could give all kinds of examples of this sort of thing, but again, if I do that, I'm just going to be giving out all these people's names on the radio because it's true, and that's not good policy. But Shelley Wright, you like your name, Wright?
I like my name.
And throughout your life, do people play with that much, right versus wrong, or any of that?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Hmm. So, Forrest, I know what you've gotten. Run,
oh, yeah.
Forrest.
Oh, yeah.
Run, Forrest, run. Your life changed that year, didn't it?
It did.
I did that.
Freshman year of college.
Just, what, 3 weeks ago when we were leaving? Run, Forrest, run.
Well, I was thinking, like, if I do a political show, maybe I should call it the War and Peace Show. That sounds really stupid, actually. name plays. Okay, let's go to Vienna, Austria. Right now, they're believing, here they're saying, that the teeth of two famed composers may have been stolen. Let's see, who are these composers? Okay, we have the Waltz King, Johann Strauss Jr., and the German Romantic composer, Johannes Brahms. And apparently, okay, I'm trying to figure out where were these teeth. Okay, from their graves. I mean, they're accusing a man of breaking into their graves. Grave robbings. Yeah, when I first saw this, I thought, man, maybe they're in a museum, and he just took them. They're claiming a guy dug up their graves and just took their teeth.
Oh.
That's like a fraternity initiation or something, right?
I mean, like, pulled them out of the skull or disarticulated the lower jaw and took that, or...
Yeah. They say that, you know, there's no motivation for it that they know of. And you know, and obviously, these composers are now decomposing. Waka waka. Had to go there. Let's see. What's next? Here's a story from Tennessee. That's not too far away from where we are. Woman smacks preacher in the face with a Bible. Okay, I can envision this happening.
I can, too.
64-year-old woman facing assault charges. She got into a dispute inside the Baptist church and just pulls out her Bible and whops the guy pretty good in the face. I'm not sure if Jesus would approve of that. That's what she did, they say. Okay, we're coming up on a break here. When we come back, I'm going to toss out a Florida story, and then I'm going to tell you a story from Germany that I find really interesting for a number of reasons. It's a story about apes. And, you know, there has been this controversy about how are we related to apes and things like that if they're not still evolving, if evolution's a real thing. But what if they are still evolving? And they are becoming a little bit too smart for comfort. What are they going to turn out like? Planet of the Apes kind of material. We'll dig into that when we return. And then soon enough, it will be time for the Dark 30 Hour. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. It is the show where the unusual becomes usual, keeping you company tonight. It's called Speaking of Strange.
Without you.
final minutes of tonight's Speaking of Strange Hour number 2. And then we'll take a break, and we'll come back with our third hour of the show. That's the one we call the Dark 30 Hour. And it's not for everyone. That's the hour of the show when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial and, for some people, offensive stuff. But, you know, we don't make it up. We're just here to pass it along. And so here's, I guess, a couple, well, two or three stories, depending on how time flows, that you might find interesting. Let's see here. A guy in Kearney, Nebraska. I've read at least maybe three stories from Nebraska or something like that. Guy from Nebraska, he wanted to apply for a job in a restaurant. And, of course, you know, with the economy the way it is, and they say this drought is driving up prices at the grocery store soon, people are still really struggling to get jobs. So this guy goes into the restaurant. He filled out his application and handed it to an employee. And the employee is reading over the application and got down to the bottom and flipped it over, and it said, "If you be quiet and help me, you will not die."
Oh.
That's very persuasive language to get your new job. So the employee called the cops. They arrested the man at gunpoint, searched him. They didn't find any weapons or anything. And they claim that when the cops asked him, "Why did you write this? Why did you do this?" The favorite question of a police officer. The guy said he went to the restaurant hoping to find a way to fulfill his sexual fantasies.
Okay.
Nobody can make sense of that. But that's, who knows where that was going? Who knows what world that man was living in? Story number 2. Where did this take place? LaGrange. I'm presuming that's
Texas.
Is that Texas? Okay. I'm going to have a conversation with some of the people who format some of my stories, because I try to make sure that I know where these things take place. And, you know, you can find a town called Smithville in every state of the country or something, you know, so you need to know where it is. But this is LaGrange. We'll say it's, you know, Texas sounds good. I don't know. Says here, a crabby old man.
Texas.
Yes, confirmation. Has been in court 17 times for noise pollution from a loud car stereo. That's kind of a weird dynamic. You don't really think about crabby old man and loud stereo issues.
I'm a crabby old man.
What is he, cranking up Glenn Miller Orchestra? He's rocking it out to some Tommy Dorsey. So anyway, yeah, after 17 times, this man, who, and it says here this guy's 89 years old. This guy has finally been sentenced by a judge for what the judge, one of these creative judges apparently, felt was an appropriate punishment. He sentenced the man to play at full volume in his car for at least 3 hours a day for 45 days, My Little Teapot.
Ooh. Harsh.
A punishment befitting the crime.
And how many versions of My Little Teapot would you be looking for and trying to find?
Well, you know what? This guy drives a 1976 Aston Martin, dude. That's a James Bond type car. He's not poor. I guess, you know, maybe he's one of these rich guys who just, you know, figured, hey, I can blast my stereo all I want. I'm 89. I'm driving an Aston Martin. But no, he's being taught a lesson. Is this cruel and unusual punishment? Yeah, probably. Probably for everybody. So, last story before we take our break. This is from Hanover, Germany. Apparently, some chimpanzees escaped from their pen at the Hanover Zoo there by making a ladder. Yeah. They were basically grabbing a variety. Now, obviously, you know, we're not talking about like something you buy at Lowe's here. But they knew what they were doing. They were taking twigs and other things and building up a nice little, you know, layer of things they could climb over and get out. And, you know, I read stories like this, and like I say, straight out of Planet of the Apes. I wonder, what's going to happen when monkeys figure out how to make bows and arrows? When monkeys and apes and things can make bows and arrows, the apocalypse will set in. Us versus the apes. We're going to take a break when we come back. Yes, it'll be that time. Time to dig into the crazy, dark stuff. And that's why we call it the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren. We'll be right back.